This is Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Hi, this is Paul, and you are listening to the Roland Berger People Insights podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 6 of the Roland Berger People Insights podcast. My name is Ben. I'm a communications manager at Roland Berger, and today's episode is about Paul. Paul is not only a successful senior consultant at Roland Berger, but also an active world-class musician. Let's find out how he balances notes and numbers and learn more about his way into consulting. Stay tuned and get ready to be inspired.
Now we're starting with the warm-up questions. Classical or modern music?
Classical or modern music? At risk of starting us off with a very consulting-style answer, I would say I actually believe classical versus modern or pop music is a false dichotomy. So ultimately, it's all music. It's the same harmonies and chord progressions tugging at our heartstrings, and it's the same melodies that get stuck in our head.
Solo practice or group rehearsal?
Again, can't have one without the other. The majority of my typical music education was just solo practice. For years, you spend 5, 6, 7 hours in a day in a room by yourself. But ultimately, the whole thing that gives it meaning is going into the group rehearsal. So it's not unlike consulting. You craft your own skills, but then you have to apply it in a group setting.
Structured routine or spontaneous creativity?
Among my musician colleagues, I've always been known as the structured routine guy, even to the extent that a few of my friends use my last name as a verb. So to dwire something means to plan it meticulously. As a cellist, I've always made sure that my practice was hyper-structured. Of course, now in consulting, people expect that I'm the spontaneous creative guy because I was an artist. So I hope to live up to both of those, but I probably tend to be more of a structured routine guy.
Thank you very much. Now let's find out a little bit more about your life. Where did you grow up?
So I was born in the US, but my parents moved to Vienna when I was 5 months old. And then we moved to Munich when I was 8 years old. And I finished high school or my Abitur there, and then moved to the US for college when I was 19.
How did you first come in contact with music?
None of my family are professional musicians, but there was a lot of music around in the house at all times. My mother played piano and organ. My two older sisters both played instruments as well. In Vienna, where I grew up until I was 8, I joined an early music program almost by default, it seemed, when I was about 4 or 5. And then in first grade, I was trying to choose what instrument to start. And I really wanted to play the double bass because I loved how big and how low it is. But I was told I was too small, so I should start on a half-size cello. Yeah, and from there, I never looked back.
What did you study and where?
My first several degrees were all in cello performance. So I got my bachelor's of music from Oberlin Conservatory, which is in a tiny town just outside of Cleveland. Then I got a master's and a doctoral degree from the University of Michigan. I then took a year to do a Fulbright fellowship in Amsterdam to study with a couple of kind of cello gurus there. And then while I was there, I was recruited to be one of the first to participate in a new specialized graduate degree at Juilliard. So I ended up in New York City for a few years. Then fast forward a few more years, and I ultimately added an MBA at University of Chicago Booth School of Business.
2015, you became assistant principal cellist for the Lyric Opera Orchestra. What does that even mean?
Yeah, so Lyric Opera is one of the biggest opera companies in the U.S. It's kind of considered number two behind the Metropolitan Opera in New York. So the orchestra is a very large orchestra with tenured positions. So the way you get that job in the first place is you have to travel there with probably 200 or 300 of your best colleague friends and sit behind a screen and play an audition. So I went through that process and ultimately won that in 2015. And then you're a member of the orchestra. Assistant principal specifically means that you're in the front stand. And you and the principal lead the section, and you're the ones also playing solos whenever they come up. And there are quite a few in the opera literature, fortunately. So in terms of my daily life, it was still a combination of solo practice at home and then group rehearsal at the opera. The schedule varies a lot because there's so many moving parts to an opera production: the orchestra, the chorus, the singers, the stage sets. And often you're playing several performances of 3 different full operas in a single week. So at first it was pretty intense. I had never played operas before. And as assistant principal, I'm sitting in the front meeting a section of cellists who had all been in the orchestra for over 30 years, so they really know what they're doing. And one thing that never got old was every time I walked into the pit from backstage, be it for a rehearsal or for a show, looking out into this beautiful hall with 4,000 velvet red seats, that was pretty gratifying. So definitely a nice place to work.
How did the other members of the orchestra and the cellists react? Because you were the new guy and they were so super experienced. How did that dynamic work out?
Yeah, at first I was super worried because there are stories of big orchestras where, you know, people are set in their ways. They really think highly of what they're doing. And I mean, that was true here too, but the cello section in particular, they were super welcoming and they were very nice. They never tried to make me feel like I don't have what it takes or I don't have the right experience. They, if anything, it was the opposite. You know, there were some operas where, I don't know, it was a very tricky spot for us to follow the singer. And you know, one of the cellists from behind would tap me on the shoulder in a rehearsal and say, "Hey, look ahead to this page. That's a really tricky spot. You want to watch out for it." So they were actually really supportive and helping me succeed rather than trying to kind of trick me up and wanting to see me fail. So it was a really very collegial experience.
How did the pandemic impact you in a period of time?
The pandemic took a huge toll on the performing arts. Of course, it took a huge toll on a lot of areas of society. But for the arts, you know, as one of my colleagues likes to say, we cram people into closed small spaces for hours at a time. So it was nice while it lasted. So I think, like the whole world, people were trying to pretend as long as possible as though this was something that would pass pretty quickly. But of course, eventually we had some sense of what was coming. So for me personally, one night in March 2020, I was leaving the stage door from the opera on a kind of still riding a high from just having performed Puccini's opera, Madame Butterfly. And then within a few days, not only was the rest of that season canceled, but we also found out the entire following season was canceled. So we were effectively all out of work for the next year and a half.
How did you cope with that bad news?
For me personally, there were a lot of reasons that my wife and I were rethinking what was coming next. My wife is a violinist too. So for both of us, it meant our industry was wiped out for the next year and a half. Additionally, we had just found out that my wife was pregnant with a beautiful daughter who happens to be turning 5 tomorrow. But yeah, for me, additionally, during this time, I wasn't suddenly removed from the opera. I was actually on the union orchestra committee at the Lyric Opera. So I spent lots and lots of Zoom calls with the executive leadership of the opera company and board members of the opera company, basically trying to figure out what the next steps are for the opera company. There was the aspect of how or whether musicians should even get paid while the opera house had to remain dark. And then there was the strategic element of what we as a performing arts institution have to offer while our physical doors are shut. And then also how that dovetails into a post-pandemic future. And of course, we didn't know when post-pandemic would even start. So that whole process made me want to get a better perspective on strategic thought, how large organizations are run. So I'm not just a musician who, you guys aren't doing a good job, but actually have some ideas of how to do it.
And which steps did you take to make that happen?
The MBA decision actually grew out of a moment several years earlier. It goes way back to when I was working on my doctorate at the University of Michigan. I was on a fellowship from the federal government, so I had 2 years of funding left, but had finished all my coursework. And my cello teacher at the time, who loved thinking outside the box and encouraging his students to do interesting things beyond playing the cello, he at some point just said to me, "Hey, Michigan has a great business school. You should just do an MBA on the side while you're finishing up your doctorate." And I think at the time, it would not have been the right fit for me. And I thought that was a ridiculous idea, but I was interested enough that I went to a bookstore to buy a GMAT study book. So fast forward to the pandemic, I have all this free time on my hands. And I did start thinking, hey, business school would actually be interesting. I do like learning. I like going to school. So that's how that came about. And this time I started studying for the GMAT in earnest and it worked out. And I ended up at Booth.
After finishing your MBA in 2023, you joined Roland Berger. How did you start your consulting career?
To be entirely honest, I didn't know much about consulting before my MBA. So originally, I imagined my MBA would be 2 years of academic exploration, then I'd see what options might interest me on the other side. Of course, that's not how it works. Instead, you're immediately funneled into this intense job recruiting process before you've even completed a single course. Once I got there, consulting was appealing to me because it is a profession where it's not a prerequisite to have prior experience in a very specific industry. And it did seem like a way to just very easily get exposed to different industries and also build up a kind of business-oriented skill set. Once I heard about Roland Berger in particular, I was partially attracted to it because of its German origins and just having grown up in Germany, that intrigued me. But probably even more than that, from the very start, it was also the firm where I felt the most genuine interest in who I am. As you can imagine, whenever I gave my semi-rehearsed intro at business school events or recruiting events, the first reaction was always, "Oh my God, that's so cool. I never met a professional cellist who went to business school before," which of course is gratifying on some level. But then often the next reaction would be, "Okay, so what are you doing here?" You know? Now, there's a sense of non-traditional backgrounds and some of them being a better fit than others. To be fair, I didn't get that very much. One thing I definitely got from Roland Berger was that I always felt a genuine interest in me as a person and potential colleague, and a clear underlying notion that, of course, there's value in hearing the perspective of a so-called non-traditional applicant, even if I had no experience making market models or whatever your kind of traditional business school student or consultant may have had in the past.
So what is your role at Roland Berger and what do you enjoy most about consulting?
My role at Roland Berger is a senior consultant in the Boston office. I'm part of the energy team, which is part of regulated and infrastructure. What I enjoy most about consulting thus far is working with my colleagues. The energy team in the US is an outstanding group of people, both in terms of their experience, their curiosity, their collegiality, and helping each other grow. That has really been striking to me. I would not have expected that in an intense job like this. And then, of course, the learning curve is immense. Challenging. It can be difficult at times if you have time pressure or, you know, deliverables coming up. But, you know, sometimes I think back to 2.5 years ago and just how much more I know about, of course, about the energy industry itself, but also just about how organizations are run, how things work. So I think those are the two things that really keep me going in consulting and, of course, specifically at Roland Berger.
How do you balance work and musical practice?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure I would always use the word balance, but there are definitely times where I go several weeks at a time without practicing the cello. That's just natural if I'm on an intense project where that really has to be my focus. But then on the other hand, Roland Berger does enable me to really dig into my musical part of my life as well. For example, I've been taking a 10-week sabbatical in the summers. And during this time, there are a couple festivals that I've been playing for many years that I go play concerts at. I sometimes tour with my string quartet. So there are a lot of things that I still am able to do, and Roland Berger enables that with that sabbatical.
What parallels do you notice between performing on stage and delivering solutions to clients? Is that even comparable?
Yeah, I think they're definitely comparable. So I think what they have in common is the extreme preparation. So both when you're presenting to a client and when you're presenting or performing for an audience, you want to do whatever you can on a personal level to be prepared to deliver a compelling, beautiful performance, right? But then unexpected things still happen. For example, last summer I was playing the Schumann Cello Concerto with an orchestra, and often the soloist, the cellist, is on a little podium. And while I was playing, that podium actually broke. So the end pin where my cello was kind of stuck into the podium, it just slipped down to the floor, like 2 feet down. So suddenly my cello was down at my knees. So that's something you don't think of in the practice room to prepare for. I was able to just kind of pick it up, choose a different spot on the podium, and then talk to the conductor where we restart and go on. And I think, you know, there are equivalents of that in business presentations too. where, you know, it could be a technical issue. It could be the client asking a question you didn't expect or challenging you in a way that you didn't expect. And, you know, to the extent that you can, you have to be prepared for the unexpected. I think that's common across client presentations and musical performances.
What would you say is more challenging, playing in front of thousands of people or sitting in a boardroom basically with highly stressed but interested client who wants to see your solutions for the issues?
I think that depends a lot on who you are. So for me, I very much thrive on playing for thousands of people, and generally it's something that I know I'm one of the best at in the world. So it's, to me, I love that feeling of people being there to hear me play music and being able to share this and also be spontaneous in the moment with that. For the client presentation, for me, it's a little more nerve-wracking at the moment, but that's probably mostly because I just haven't done it thousands and thousands of times as I have with music. And as you said, there is an intensity in that, even though they want to hear your solutions, there's probably also a whole set of different solutions that they have in their head that you need to kind of defend against. So to me, that at the moment is more nerve-wracking than performing for thousands of people.
Did a client ever ask to perform for them?
Good question. No, thus far, I haven't necessarily advertised that I'm a musician. It is interesting you ask, though. During my internship, which was in the summer of 2022, we did have a dinner at a steakhouse, and some of our client counterparts were there as well. And I actually had my cello with me because I had a concert on the weekend that I had to travel straight from the client site to. And at some point, our project manager asked if I wanted to play for them at the restaurant. So this project manager actually asked the restaurant to turn off their music, and everyone got quiet. All the other diners in the restaurant got quiet. So I played a movement of a Bach solo suite. So I have played for a client. And as the PM told me, this is probably the client dinner that this client will never forget.
How has your musical background shaped your approach to problem solving in business?
Honestly, I think a lot of the problem solving happening, you know, for me personally in the practice room is a micro version of what problem solving in business requires as well. So it's really just breaking down issues, thinking about different ways you can approach it, different ways you can think about and solve a little portion of the issue, but then also keep in mind how it fits into the larger challenge or strategy that you're trying to solve for. So I do think that my musical background has shaped my approach to problem solving, but I also don't think that it's that idiosyncratic compared to how other people think about it.
And how do you stay inspired and continue to nurture both your artistic and business talents?
Actually, I think it's exactly the fact that I do both that keeps me super inspired and nurtured for both. So, no, I think consulting is a job where it's easy to get in a hamster wheel and start feeling burned out. Because I have this almost like this other life that I can go to during my summer sabbatical for 10 weeks, where I'm still doing something that I'm very intensely involved in, that I do really well, that I'm gratified by. While I'm on that sabbatical, I'm already thinking about how great it's going to be to come back to Rolandberga to do some consulting. So I think that's a very unique situation that I have. And of course, conversely, I look forward to the time where I can just go focus on playing the music. So I think the balance or the combination of the two is what makes both of them even more gratifying and more important in my life.
What advice would you give to professionals seeking to balance artistic passions with corporate career?
My main advice would be to say that it's possible, and there are probably more people out there than you think who are doing it. So just find them and go talk to them. And not necessarily to try to do what they're doing, but to open your mind to the possibilities that do exist. So I think it's definitely on the idiosyncratic end of the spectrum in terms of career paths, like what I'm doing. So there's no one-size-fits-all or typical career progression. So in that sense, it's hard to say, I'm giving you this kind of advice. For me right now, it's having a consulting job that's completely unrelated to any of my artistic endeavors. But importantly, a job, as we talked about, that allows me to keep those artistic endeavors as part of my life.
What does it mean to be a professional musician compared to, let's say, an amateur or hobby musician?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's a question that professional musicians grapple with all the time, because for me, at least, it still is a passion. And you never want that part to go away. But once you've committed to being a professional, especially if that's your only profession, then of course there's a lot more tied to playing music than just, as you say, meeting some friends and having fun. You still want to be able to do that, but of course the stakes are higher. Your livelihood depends on it. Of course, once that's true, you get into politics, career trajectories, and all of that. And for example, the job I won, it's so difficult and takes so much hard work, but also luck, to be the one chosen from several hundred people behind a screen, because it could depend on what part of the day your audition is. Did the audition committee just come back from a bad lunch? Are they tired? Do they not like the piece that you chose to play? You know, all of those things can factor into this huge step in your career. There's a lot more pressure involved. I think once you are a professional musician, you're dealing with a lot of the interpersonal dynamics that you would at any other job. So yeah, there's some challenges associated with that. But I, for my part, have always been lucky to be able to keep the passion and, for the most part, keep good relationships and kind of a lack of competitive spirit that would destroy that for me.
Thank you very much, Paul, for taking the time to let us take a look inside the life of a professional musician and senior consultant. If you'd like to know more about Roland Berger, our initiatives and the way we work and what values we are holding up, then visit our career website. And of course, do not forget to follow our social media channels. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Ben. Have an amazing week. And always remember, be the original you.